AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Football on off the ball.
This might just be modern media, but it feels to me that Arsenal, maybe because they haven't won the league for 21 years, but it feels like they get into the running far too early. And maybe that's our fault in the media as well.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
You're listening to Off the Ball Breakfast,
Ireland's sports breakfast show. Yeah!
Welcome back to Off the Ball Breakfast, Friday morning's show on this, the 12th of December, with myself and Cullum with you until 9:30 or so. And Cullum, I suppose on any show, yeah, it's like the old analogy of the duck swimming in the water and it's all very calm, but beneath the water there are the legs going very fast. And on as with any show, we have a great team behind the show that do basically all of the work, attempt to make us look good and sound good and research, etc. But for one of those people, it's her last day of the internship, Keelan Burke. And waving out to Keelan behind the glass. She's with us for a number of months, Cullum, working closely with us. And we just figured we had to acknowledge her presence and her work and her efforts.
The best thing I can say here, it's very sad to lose Keelan, the team, part of the crew here for the last number of weeks and months. And as you said at the start, they're hugely important. Does all the work behind the scenes to make us look in any way half decent on any given day.
And which isn't easy, by the way.
Very, very difficult task. Probably the toughest thing she'll ever have to do. And we're sad to lose her on Breakfast, but we haven't lost her off the ball because she will remain on the team widely. But her time at the Breakfast show for now is complete. You haven't met her out there. But anything at all that you've liked about Off the Ball the last couple of months that we've put out from this show probably has Keelan's fingerprints over it in some capacity. So you'd be sorely missing a team, but delighted to work with you overall. So fair play, Keelan.
Thank you, Keelan. Fair play. There's also a tear. There's a tear in Cullum's eye here as he was saying that as well.
Oh, they're all crying.
Everyone's crying.
Oh, yeah. Charlie's had to stop. Yeah, there'll be no sound now for oil.
Kleenex have come out. We also have Keith Tracy here. Good morning, Keith.
Good morning, lads. Happy Friday to everybody.
Happy Friday. We'll chat to Keith Friday in a bit. He's going to come in a while as well. He's just on the way, and I think he's commuting at the moment.
It's stuck in traffic again.
Yeah.
It's mental.
Hopefully, he didn't get the
Lewis. And he's up north, fixed the board. Keith Friday,
right?
So he shouldn't be delayed because no one knows where he lives or anything. Can't pay him.
Right, okay.
He's no PPS number or anything.
He's still so happy.
Yeah.
You know you've made it when you talk about yourself in the third person.
Yeah.
Flying high here. It's great.
Someone was asking last week, where is it? So we tested it last week. We said, we'll leave it off 1 week to see if people miss this. And there was a few comments coming, where's Keith Friday? He's back now. We have loads of questions.
Yeah, he was left on the bench. Didn't get the show. not for the first time.
Well, he went to the mix zone afterwards. He was giving out about us. So we couldn't play him. You did Shell's Palace last night for us.
Yeah. I was listening to his on the way in, what Oliver Glasner was saying. I was a little bit surprised at how aggressive Shells were. You could call it naive as well. And it's very easy to make the jump. You look at Shamrock Rovers after being in Europe for a couple of years, but there's an evolution to their play. They've realised that there's no point playing in around at the back for, you know, getting a pat on the back. And Shells probably feel like they got a pat on the back from Oliver Glasner last night, saying, they played a little bit of football. I'd rather make it horrible. When they went from back to front and Sean Boyd won a couple of headers, Kelly towards the end, that was the only real chance Shelbourne got. And I mentioned it in commentary last night. They were winning free kicks on the wings, and rather than slowing it down, getting the big lads up and, you know, getting a bit of tension in the air for the set piece that's about to come, Shells would get it and knock it into the middle of the park and start playing football. I think, don't do that. Not on a wet night and a little bit horrible. Go and test the centre-half, see how much they want, to see if they want to put their head on wet balls and all that sort of stuff. So, look, Shells were beaten by the better team. I don't think it was any disgrace to be beaten by, you know, 3-0 by one of the best teams in the Premier League right now. I mean, to try and put it into some sort of context, Mark Gahey and Adam Wharton will be going to the World Cup in the summer looking to win the World Cup. Any player in the Shelbourne team would be happy just to be going to the World Cup. So there's a huge, huge gulf in class. I was listening to Joey O'Brien, and do you remember a couple of weeks ago he asked me what's the most underrated underrated thing, an underrated attribute a professional footballer has. Mm-hmm. And I said force touch. Mm. People just take it for granted. You think, oh, you pass it to one fella, it's instant control, you move on, you think, oh, that was easy. But the force touch is so hard, and on a wet and bobbly night, the Palace players, it came and it stuck. Even Big Uche, I watched him on the weekend against Fulham, and I thought, he's a little bit raw, not great, but my God, the size of him. Absolute. So Mark Coyle was marking from corners, and I thought, good luck with that. Good luck with that. He was an absolute handful. Even Pino, Spanish international, running through the middle of the park, and the Shelbourne just opened up, and it was an easy enough finish for him. But like the likes of Kamad goes unnoticed, Japanese international. Brilliant. And the more I watch of him, the more I really, really like him. Even, I know he didn't play last night, Mitchell in the Premier League as a left back. They're a very, very good team, very, very well drilled. Jefferson Lerma coming off the bench, Colombian international. Will Hughes, 195 Premier League appearances. So look, they're a class above Crystal Palace. They will have aspirations of going on and winning the European competition. But I thought Shells, I'd say aggressive rather than naive. They left Wood, Boyd and Martin up as a three an awful lot, which obviously you're getting outnumbered in midfield there. And it was brilliant to see the likes of Adam Wharton knock the ball around. And again, you look at him and you think, that's easy. He's never really gets under pressure, never really gets tackled. That's because he's a yard ahead of everybody in his own head. And yeah, I think it was total dominance from Crystal Palace. Shells had the one shot on target, and that was, I think it was in like the 89th minute of the game. Benitez made a good save, but zero shots on target in the first half. I think they had an XG of 0.08. So yeah, very, very little attacking threat from Shells, but you know, what a great memory. Like you go back, was it 3 years they were in the fourth division? So they've gone from, you know, they've come a long, long way, and these are the type of nights that their fans would have been dreaming of when they were in the fourth division. So the Shells fans should enjoy it. Although they got beaten last night, they should enjoy it. A brilliant experience. They just played one of the best teams in the Premier League. Although I think there's a little bit of people think Crystal Palace, and you think, yeah, they're good, but you know, it's only Crystal Palace. They're fourth in the Premier League. There's not an awful lot of teams better than them right now. So absolutely no embarrassment, although it could have got that way if Palace had kept their shooting boots on. But yeah, good memories, and I'm sure Shelbourne will look back and there'll be learnings on it. And you know, there was times where you're looking at the Crystal Palace lads standing next to the Shelbourne lads and you thought, they just look bigger, stronger, fitter. And look, it's not a slight on the Shells that they've had a big, long, hard season in their legs already. Crystal Palace are just getting into the business end of theirs. So, yes, beaten by a better team, a classy, classy team. So, yeah, no worries, no big worries about it.
It's funny, the first touch thing, like we've probably spoken about it before. I remember playing a five-a-side, media five-a-side tournament years ago, 5 or 6 years ago probably, and one of the teams we played was a retired League of Ireland legends. Like, I remember playing up against and I was probably fitter than them at the time because I was younger and they were retired, but it was like Trevor Vaughan and Glenn Crowe and these lads. And I remember thinking the fitness didn't matter because their first touch was so good and they were just flicking the ball around me. I was like chasing shadows. And like their first touch was, they didn't even have to run. Like they were kicking the life out of every team that played because of that first touch. It's amazing when you see it up close, the difference. Like
you know what the worst thing is? I've been lucky enough to play against Paul Scholes, and every now and then you think, you know what, I'll just sit off, I'll make sure he can play around me, and those little angles that he tries to flick around the corner, I'll just stay in the channel. I let him have it in front of me. Every now and then he'll pretend he's had a bad touch and you go, oh, I have it, and he'll just play around you and go, oh my God. And he's just so good. So he looks so comfortable all the time and you think, I have a nibble now, but it's all orchestrated. He knows exactly what he's doing. So I thought the Shelbourne players could have probably got more, you know, more bodies behind the ball. There was a time where the ball went out to the right wing and I saw it, the nudge steal. I was like, look, there's four players in the box against Crystal Palace in the first 15 minutes of the game. I thought, not sit back and be totally, totally defensive, but you don't like saying it out loud. But if I was a Shelbourne player last night in the dressing room, I might have been just whispering around, go, lads, don't let this get embarrassing. These are a really, really good team. We can get beat, but there's a way to lose. And when you go 1-0 down after 11 minutes, you're probably thinking, oh, God. But they were aggressive. They had a bit of a go. And I suppose that's all you could really ask from a Shelbourne point of view.
The first touch aspect, right, is it so much the technical side of it, because the Shells players would have good first touches?
Yeah.
It's more that the Palace lads don't have to think about it, is it?
Yeah, and look, I've been banging this drum about technique work in Ireland. It probably gets overlooked, and it's because we go back into, you know, facilities and time on pitch and, you know, how often you're going to get to deal with recovery sessions versus technical sessions. But, you know, when I was a young lad at Blackburn, and I know I've said this before, but it's such a big, big part from the age of 15 to... when did I get, I left the academy pretty much straight away, but whenever I had to train with the under 18s, from 9 o'clock in the morning till 10:30 till training starts, you're in the indoor and you're just doing technique, an hour and a half. That's before you start training. And then you have another 20 minute session of technique and then little boxes and rondos. You don't get that in Ireland. You turn up, you do a little bit of, you know, I wouldn't even say technique work. You do warm up, you do a couple of boxes, you go into your shape and you play a couple of games. Very, very rarely is there a technical session put on for people to improve. And you look at Shell's players, you think, they have a good first touch. Mm. But look at the Palace players and think, that's an exceptional first touch. What are the differences?
What are you doing for that hour and a half before training starts? Is it balls being drilled into you, different types?
No, we had a wall that literally had had a line about 2 or 3 foot up and probably 6 foot up. So you'd have a box on the painted on the indoor. So you'd have to, a game of head tennis against the wall of somebody. Yeah. So the ball would have to bounce in the box and it'd have to hit the line. So you could play one touch, two touch. You could actually get a net out and play proper head tennis. There was mannequins that you'd do little half volleys against. And we used to have a proper size goal, but we'd have a 7-a-side goal and we put the 7-a-side goal into the proper goal and it would only leave the top corners and maybe yard either side. Mm-hmm. So I just practice free kicks there or volleys or whatever it would. And you would look, you'd be enjoying yourself, but it's technique work. And I don't want to go back down to street football or thing, but you know, you go into an academy, it's to get polished up. It's to sort the footballer out. But where footballers are born and bred is street football.
Yeah.
And we don't really have that anymore. People are going into academies and the academies are trying to polish them up, but technically they're really, really lacking.
Mm. I think even growing up, like, you learn how to play up the road, like, with your buddies. That's how you actually, and then as you say, you tailor it in training. But I remember even playing like centre mid, was never emphasised the importance of scanning before you received the ball.
Yeah.
It was all like just trap the ball and keep hold of possession, but it was never about awareness. Just those little things. Now, that's a good while ago, and maybe that's changed in Irish football. And this obviously is only playing football as a hobby to an extent, playing for your local club. But I wonder how much more pronounced it is the higher you go up in Ireland and then you take that other step in England. Like, it does seem like Joey O'Brien talked about levels, but there's probably difference in levels of approach as well.
There is, yeah. And it's not until, like, I was obviously a winger and I always had my, you know, me boots on the sideline, so I could see the whole game. Every time the ball was coming to me, I could see everything that was happening. And as I got a little bit fatter and a little bit older, he put me into centre midfield. And it wasn't until I started having to scan, and when you, just now that I'm thinking about this, it's rattled a little one in my mind from last night, the amount of times that Celtic played straight balls into the middle of the park. Yeah. And I've done that in training, and training has been stopped. Really? Managers have gone, you do not run down the barrel of a pass. If you're running straight at a pass and the ball is coming straight into you, you've got to look all the way left, all the way right. You can't quite see. But if you open up an angle and come just to the left or just to the right, you can see quickly and better. It's those little details. And I was always told, no straight passes, never into the middle of the park, especially not in your own half. But these are the little things you start to learn. When I went into midfield, I understood that I had to see what was coming behind me and in front of me. You start to understand that your head has to be on a swivel. And what I always taught and what I was always told is, if you're not quite sure what's behind you or around you, just bounce it back to the player that you've got it from. Mm. Bounce it back straight away. Or if the player is half decent, he will tell you to turn.
How often could you do the dummy? So your centre half passes to you in centre mid in a straight pass, which is the no-no that you're talking about. So you hope that the marker is right on you, right? So hopefully they're not showing you enough respect. They're right on, they're going to take the ball off you. So you slip a little dummy, go back to the other side of centre mid. That's probably not falling for that often, is it, at that level, that they can read a dummy on you?
No, I don't think players would really commit to that. You know, if you're getting marked in that situation, I think you'd prefer to be quite loose, because you're thinking, he's in a little bit of trouble here, half a bad touch and I'm all over him. So you're probably, I would be quite passive in that situation. I'd be tight, but fairly loose, that if he did try and take me on, I'd be able to have a nibble. But if he bounces it back, it's not an awful lot I could do. So, but what I would do, if I got a straight pass into midfield and somebody was all over me, I'd just hook it into the channel and I'd berate the centre-half and give it to me. Yeah. And like, this is one thing that really I couldn't understand last night. Crystal Palace got throw-in after throw-in, and what did they do? Long throw. Mm. Shelbourne got free kicks in the wide area and he played short.
What are they trying to do there? They're hardly showing, it's not a vanity project, is it? They're hardly showing that they want to be able to play ball against a good side.
I'm not sure.
Is it unpredictability? Because Palace will be expecting the opposite. So maybe they're thinking, well, we'll do exactly what they don't think we'll do.
Yeah, but possibly maybe do the opposite of what they're expecting. But if I've always been told, and Sam Allardyce used to always say, if that's what they're expecting, give it to them. Don't let them down. Just keep putting it in there. And like the amount of times, there wasn't a lot of chances for Shelbourne, but the chances that they did create, it was all long balls picking up seconds. I don't understand why you would have a game of football off a very, very good Premier League team. Why don't we get it down and knock it round? And the conditions weren't conducive to a good game of football anyway. So the fact that Palace have come over and played the conditions better and they're the more talented team just seems strange to me. I don't think there was a lot Shelbourne could have done last night because Palace turned up and they were decent. But you felt that they could have made it a little bit more horrible. I mean, it wasn't until, I think it was about 5-10 minutes into the second half, Mark Coyle whacks Eddie Nketiah over and you're thinking, ooh, Where were them tackles in the first 10 minutes? And now, look, I'm not saying go around and rattle into everybody, but just give that defensive dogginess and, you know, this is going to be really, really difficult. You want to earn this. And, you know, like I say, when they score after 11 minutes, you're sort of...
They're all right in that first 10 minutes. With Cameron Leverage's little Zidane pirouette. It was good. Can you explain to me what Jeremy Pino was doing to find so much space in the first half? It's kind of this inside right position that they couldn't pick him up.
Yeah, he was drifting, and Palace did it really well. Whether it was Eddie Nketiah or Uche or even Pino, they would go into the midfield, and once or twice the Shelbourne players would drift in there with them, and as soon as they drifted in there, they would spin back in behind the other way and the ball would arrive. The amount of times that there was one where I think Shelbourne had the ball, there was a turnover, Adam Wharton won it, and he just played it right through the middle of Shelbourne. Where's the defence? Like, stay tight. I know you just have the ball and you want to be open and expansive, but realise who you're playing against. And if you lose this ball, they're going to go straight for your juggler and more than likely score. So I'd have kept an awful lot more people behind the ball. But again, you're probably damned if you do, damned if you don't. And Joey probably thought, look, second to last game of the season, why not just go and have a bit of a swing rather than just boring everybody and playing five at the back and four in front and one and, you know, all that type of stuff. Either way, I think they would have ended up getting beaten regardless of tactics.
It was a disappointing night and cold night as well for Shamrock Rovers against Breiðablik over in Iceland as well. Laugard Dalsvillir was the venue for this one, and Ben Symes was there for us and he's on the line with us now. Good morning, Ben.
Shane, lads, how are you?
Keeping well. Have you warmed up yet?
Just about, Shane. I have never, ever experienced conditions like that. And I'm not the only one. I spoke to Rory Gaffney after the game and he literally said, I've never experienced anything like that and I probably never will again. The wind and the rain, I can't describe how bad it was. It said on the temperatures it was 4 degrees. It was a hell of a lot colder degrees. Hell of a lot colder than 4 degrees pitch side, lads.
Were you prepped for that? Had you the layers on? Was it a complete
had the layers on. And we got there and they were like, oh, we've a space for you up on the gantry. And you went up and the wind just hits you. And it's like... I can't imagine playing in that. And all the Rovers players were wearing the long sleeves, except of course for three centre backs, Pico, Dan Cleary, and Lee Grace were all in the short sleeves. No gloves to be seen anywhere.
That is bonkers. Were you ever a gloves man?
I wasn't allowed. No, Deutsch wouldn't allow it.
Really?
Yeah, no, wouldn't allow. Well, sometimes you had to wear a long sleeve jersey. If you got a bit of blood on your jersey, you might get a long sleeve, but no, didn't like all that sort of stuff, especially in training. No snoods, no hats, no gloves.
Jesus.
Shin guards on, ready to rock.
Well, if a bit of player likes to keep warm when they're training, like, do you know? I'm sure that's gone now. The modern day and age managers.
We were doing a crossing and finishing session, and I crossed the ball, and it was Junior Stanislas had a hat on, and he headed it, but he made an absolute mess of the header, and Sean Dyche like nearly ran after him. He was like, "Get that hat off you!" and told everybody, "No hats, no gloves." Yeah, they've been banned ever since, and I still think he has that stance.
Right, okay.
Jeez, they all could have died last night by the sounds of it if they didn't have hats and gloves on, the way you're describing it here, Ben. Like, it's so disappointing, isn't it? Because they take the lead, Ben. Graham Burke, what were you saying? His 13th goal in Europe, and they have acumen at this level, Rovers. They know they can do it, and then we saw what unfolded.
Yeah, Rovers had complete control of the game, to be honest with you, lads. They kind of took them about 10-15 minutes to get the bearings with the conditions up there, obviously. Breiðablik are well more used to that, even if it wasn't in their home stadium. But Rovers had complete control of the game. Mm-hmm. Now, they had a huge win in their backs. Dylan Watts kept playing these lovely balls in behind the defence. And I mean, Graham Burke did what Graham Burke does. Like, he had complete control of the game. They couldn't get near him. They were on his heels every time he got the ball, chasing after him. The goal is brilliant. Great bit of work by Healy. Set up Gaffney down the line. Squares back cross. And Healy has a little 1-2 at Burke. And Burke finishes it. And you kind of think, this is it now. They'll kick on. They'll get another before half time, and they might have to sit back in the second half and hold the lead. But to concede just 3 minutes later, I mean, Stephen Bradley said it after the game that he's disappointed. I think when they go home and watch it back, they're going to be even more disappointed, because it's kind of just a catalogue of errors that we are not used to with this Rovers team. Dylan Watts, very unlike Dylan Watts, kind of switches off, allows a short corner to happen. Then there's a ball that's just played right across the front post. No one is there to knock it away. And then Ed McGuinty as well will hold himself to such high standards. He won't be happy with getting across the goal. And once that goal went in, you kind of felt like, that was it. Like, they needed to hold on here for those 5 minutes. And Bradley said it himself after the game, the few minutes after you score are always important. But especially in Europe, I mean, you're away from home up there.
Yeah.
If you give that home side and that home crowd any sort of feel of advantage, it just completely swung the game.
How can you explain it, Ben? Because, like, Celts haven't scored a goal yet, right, in five games, which will be a record if they don't score in their last game. But Rovers are actually below Celts by a goal. The -8 goal difference, conceded 12. So whatever about the concessions, because against Santa Clara in August they were tight at the back, so they seem to have lost that ability to defend well as a unit. But I'd say more concerned Stephen Bradley would be is about how passive they were last night in attack, and the conditions were brutal, but that was the same for both sides. Is there a passivity that you saw last night?
I wouldn't say that, no. As this run as a whole has been quite tough to Rovers. To be a pot two team and to draw Sparta Prague, Shakhtar Donetsk, AEK Athens, Celje, who I know they beat last year, but we've seen this year a completely different side. Even to come up here to Breidablik, like, you probably won't get many tougher away venues to visit. And the way the fixture list ran, Breidablik and Hammer and Spartans are, like, probably on paper the two easiest teams are going to play, and it's left for the last two games. I don't think there was a passiveness. The fixture list didn't help in terms of outside of Europe. Like, you went to Sparta Prague on the first day and rested a load of players because they'd carry in the cup semi-final on Sunday. And then you go to Athens on the Thursday and you have a cup final on Sunday. And, I mean, Rovers hadn't done the cup double since 87. So Bradley was always going to put his mind towards the cup and his focus towards the cup, which is very fair and very understanding. But last night was just disappointing. They just couldn't get a foothold on the game. Breidablik looked dangerous every time they went forward. There was about 13 minutes in, there was a chance. The striker kind of flicked around Pico Lopez and he was true one-on-one. And that was kind of the case for a lot of the game. They always looked like they'd be dangerous on the counter. They're just going to be very disappointed. And Bradley said after the game about that, how Shells haven't scored a goal and they're both on 1 point, you know, kind of saying you can't be reactionary. You know, he said, look at last season, we went to the knockouts. There was no one was giving out of any sort. Even when they lost to Molde, when they probably shouldn't have went out, people were still saying, well, what an achievement. You know, he was kind of really, really stressing the point of anything can happen year and year in Europe. Last year, the draw was quite kind to them, it's fair to say. And they took full advantage of that. It's one of those where, not to be a scoreboard journalist, but like Shell's game against Scandia away, where it's the 90th minute on goal, they should have never lost that game. Shamrock Rovers away in Athens, 1-0, last minute, referee makes a horrendous call and gives a penalty. There's another game where it's gone just in the flick of an instant. So it's probably a bit harsh that they are where they are, to be honest with you.
It's disappointing, particularly because we like to feel in this country, Keith, that we're you know, the league is improving at a certain level. Breidablik are the fourth best team in Iceland, and they beat the Rovers last night. Albeit the third goal was maybe, you know, Rovers were obviously chasing the equaliser at that point. But then Breidablik beat them in 2023 in the Champions League qualifiers first round as well. So this isn't a flash in the pan. So we like to think we're at a certain level in this country, and yet to be at that level, you need to be probably beating teams like Breidablik.
Yeah, we do. And look, this as a standalone result, you'd be thinking, right, alarm bells, let's dig into this a little bit further. But everything that we just said about Shelbourne in terms of a long, hard season, you double down on that in terms of Shamrock Rovers. I was at a dinner during the week and Graham Bourke was there, and I had a little bit of a chat with him before the dinner got going, and I was saying, what sort of break are you going to get this season? He said, probably about 3 weeks. And he said, the same as last year. I think he had about 10 days to 3 weeks off. last season. And that, I imagine that's copy and paste for the rest of the Shamrock Rovers team. So 3 weeks off, rolling into a season, the amount of games they've all played. And I know people will say Shamrock Rovers squad strength is unbelievable. The team is generally set in stone. Like Grace Lopez clearly played the majority of the games at centre-half. McGinty, Watts will play. Bourke has been managed because of his age, but generally will be in there. Gaffney, Healy, all these lads have played the majority of a long, long, long season, if not two seasons back-to-back. So, you know, when you start getting into it that way, you're thinking, yeah, okay, they've gone to Iceland and they've been beaten in bad conditions. I agree with you, Cullum. I think they were a little bit passive. They had the lion's share of possession. They were shading it without ever really working the goalkeeper. But I think they were a little bit passive in attack, a little bit passive in defence. But when you dig into the amount of games they played and how, you know, helter-skelter their last two seasons have been, totally understandable. And given the fact that they've just done a double and they've got group stage football and they got knockout last season, there's no need to press the panic button. I think Shamrock Rovers are flying the flag so high for League of Ireland teams in Europe. Okay, this season has been disappointing. You know, the AEK Athens draw could have easily been a win. They were a little bit unlucky in a couple of other games. So no need to press the panic button. It doesn't look good on paper, but when you dig into the stats and what's really gone on and everything in the background, totally understandable.
Is it still going to be an overachievement for Shells Rovers or any other Irish team in Europe to get anything from any of these games? Not just because of the levels that we're at, but like they are in their off season, for want of a better term. Like they're going quite a while between games, whereas like Palace are way superior to the Shells anyway. This is probably the best version of Palace we've seen. They have a ridiculous amount of resources compared to Shells, but they're also in competition. They're also playing regularly and Shells aren't.
Yeah, well, it swings and roundabouts. We can't give out about that too much because at the start of our season, we get into the qualifying stages and we've a jump on
so
the rest of Europe.
That helps us in the summer, but what about now?
Oh, yeah. Now it definitely comes back to bite us on the arse, but we can't give out about that because we get the advantages of it early on. So if we're going to give out about that, then I'm sure the rest of Europe can say, well, you just get a proper advantage at the start. So we can't have it both ways. I'm not too sure, but look, again, you can start to think, you know, we're off season. We've had a long, hard season. Now we've got to play Crystal Palace. This is a reward for how well Shelbourne have done. Mm-hmm. Again, it starts to feed into, this feels like a bit of a punishment. It isn't. You're playing against a brilliant team. There's learnings in it. And the only way for teams to get better is to play against better opposition. So sometimes you're in the mire and you think, oh God, we're getting pelters here, left, right and centre. We're chasing shadows. As long as you're taking learnings out of it, everything is absolutely okay. And this is Shelbourne's fourth season back in Europe in what, 20 odd years?
Yeah.
Absolutely fine. There's no need to press the panic button. As long as they're taking learnings. And I don't think anybody at the start of the European campaign thought Shelbourne have a chance of getting out of the group, of the league, I mean. So no need to press the panic button.
Yeah, that's fair. Ben, thanks a million for jumping on. Enjoy the trip home. Get yourself a hot chocolate, sit beside a fire. Wear some gloves even.
Oh, I know
Keith doesn't like gloves, or Sean Dyche doesn't like gloves, but throw on a pair of gloves.
I will. I never thought I'd say I can't wait to come home to Irish weather.
That's so mild and lovely here, yeah. You look like you have the sense of like the witness protection program there for Ben with the grey wall behind him. Is like he's gone into hiding, such was the cold.
Yeah, exactly. But Ben will be back with us once he returns to the show. I think that's everything, is it, for...
Yeah,
Keith Tracy,
thanks so much for calling. Someone's pointed out here that Keith Tracy and Keith Friday look remarkably similar. I've actually never seen that similarity.
No,
so it's interesting that people.
That's a compliment, good looking guy, that boy.
He is, yeah.
Anyway, thanks a million.
Thanks for coming.
Lads.
That's good. Now, very welcome back to Off the Ball Breakfast this glorious Friday morning with Shehan and myself, and delighted now to be joined in studio by Keith Friday. You made it in.
I did.
Thanks
morning,
for coming
everybody.
In, Keith. How are you?
Yeah, traffic's mental, wasn't it?
Traffic was mental yesterday.
Lewis is gone as well, isn't it, or is it back now?
I think it's back slowly
back.
First slowly and then gradually and then here. We have a comment here because people are loving this, right? Keith, I presume this is for Friday. Why in football is it normal to see two right footed centre halves but would be seen to it would be nuts, sorry, if you had two left footed centre halves? Is that true?
Normal
two right-footed centre-halves, unusual two left-footed centre-halves.
I think it's just there's not that many left-footers out there. Obviously, there's a lot of players that can use the left foot, but predominantly left-footed centre-halves, off the top of my head, I don't think there's an awful lot out there. That's more or less, so you would say, the reason that there's not an awful lot of top left-footed centre-halves. It annoys me. It's one of the basic things in football. Diogo Dalot playing left, left wing back for Manchester as a right footer, you're like, oh God. And if you're dog, you're on the bench, you're thinking, I'm a left footed left back. It's like, I know, balance and everything else, and it really annoys me.
It's to allow Ahmed, obviously, the far side, but you could definitely pick someone better than Dalot, who, as you say,
if you were
the
playing ahead of Dalot on the left wing, every time he gets it, he's coming back in on his right foot, and you're just standing there going, what's the point? I need to come in now to get involved with you. And I just think it locks up that left side. But you know, I understand the merits of what Amarin is trying to do, but as soon as you see a right footer in a left footed position, I think, and vice versa, by the way.
A360 no scope on YouTube, but obviously the first time they've ever tuned in on a Friday, they've just commented, what the hell was that? Is Keith going or not? Welcome to the show, A360 no scope. Obviously, you've never tuned in on a Friday, but we're glad to have you with us.
Listen, time is money for H. Is he going or not?
Keith Tracy
is gone, but Keith Friday.
Just tune in on Fridays, you'll get the gist. We've loads for you. Shane, you have loads for Keith Friday.
What did I have? So one of the questions that popped into my mind yesterday, Keith, was for you was, do footballers, because you hear this often, do footballers try to get a suspension around Christmas, you know, pick up their fifth yellow card or whatever it might be. It used to be a third yellow card, I think, but pick up that little suspension to give them Stephen's Day off or New Year's Day off or 23rd of December. Does that happen?
It happens. It's happened to me in the past. I didn't do it on purpose, but it comes up. And to be fair, the only time players really know about it is when a member of staff will come to you on the day of training and go, if you get another yellow, you're suspended. And you go, oh, am I? And then your mind starts going into overdrive and you're thinking, oh, okay. I had one. I was playing for Blackburn and I was in and out of the first team, sort of on the bench, but not playing an awful lot. And he said to me, look, you're going to play against Bolton Reserves. I think Joey O'Brien might have actually been playing. And it was the 22nd, 23rd of December. And I was playing away. I scored a goal. We're winning 1-0. And I can't remember the centre midfielder. He was English born, but played for the underage Irish teams with me. And I came away from him. And he's just pulling me. And you know when you're trying to go and he's still going. And 3 or 4 seconds pulling me. And I turned around and kicked him, like just volleyed him, lost my head completely. And got a straight red card. And the manager, Glenn Hodges, came straight in. I got sent off, went down the tunnel, and the manager came after me. Didn't stay and keep managing, came after me. And he said, look, if we win the game, you can go home for a couple of days. If we lose, you're running every single day. Oh, you want to see me sitting in that dressing room? Absolutely. We won, thank God. We won 1-0. And I wouldn't say I got away with it because he ran me anyway. But no, I genuinely didn't mean that. I lost my head in that split second and then I got a couple of days at home. But you hear little conversations, but I don't think anybody ever does it. You know, I'll go and get this yellow card because I fancy a day off. I don't think clubs are clever enough as well. You know, you can see by the nature of a challenge if somebody wants to pick up a yellow or it's a genuine thing. And I can't imagine clubs would be passive in that and thinking, we fancy a day off, do you?
But at the same time, you're like Pipo and Zaghi celebrating a goal when that full time whistle went. You were like, why is he so happy with this? He's a team player, man. He just loves it.
No, I think the 2 years before that, I think I was about 19, and the 2 years before that, it was the first 2 years that I had to stay in England for Christmas. So when I got the red card, I think it was the Glenn Hodges, the reserve team manager at Blackburn, I think they seen a little window to give a young lad another Christmas at home before he got properly into the professional side of things. So yeah, they done me well at the time, Blackburn, but they ran me. They did did make me pay physically.
Is it enjoyable Christmas as a footballer, or is it horrible?
Horrible.
Really?
Horrible, yeah. Look, it's strange now because there's not a lot of games this year on Stephen's Day. I think there's only one.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here as a pundit and I'm thinking, I want more games. Mm. But I've also been in a hotel on Christmas night and thinking, my Jesus, I don't want to be here. And you're sitting down, and I always go to Only Fields and Horses. It's my go-to at Christmas time. And I'd be sitting in the hotel watching that, but it depending where you are in the room, you can hear people celebrating and you can hear it and you get FaceTimes, Happy Christmas and all that. And yeah, it was a really, really depressive time for me, Christmas, because I live by myself.
You had the big house and you wake up Christmas morning.
That is bad. Silly decision, really, looking back, a 5-bedroom house to myself. And it wasn't big or clever, but yeah, waking up Christmas Day to a Marks and Spencer's pizza wasn't great.
Really?
It was very, very depressive. You get your 30-second phone call from the family, Merry Christmas, how's things? And as soon as you hang up, you're back to that big empty gaff, and the manager decides, oh, we won't train today so everybody can spend it with their families. And you're sitting in an empty gaff thinking, could have done with training. to be honest with you. But no, it was strange. But you settle in, you know, as a footballer, it is what it is. And as soon as you sign your first professional contract, you know, Christmas is out the window.
So do you like Christmas now?
I love it. Can't get enough of it with the kids. Like, Teddy is seven. Teddy's absolutely loving it. He's done his Christmas list. We watched the toy show last week, so the list has been updated and updated and updated. And the two girls are the other side of it. They're 16 and 15, but still get a lot of joy out of seeing their faces on Christmas. So I absolutely love it, and delighted I won't be spending it in a hotel anymore.
Yeah. Well, what's Keith? What is Keith Friday? So apart from Holyfields and horses, what are Keith Friday's Christmas traditions? Or Keith Tracy's?
I
movies and thick regular things
Home
you do.
Home Alone, Gremlins, Die Hard, all your usual stuff. Just park myself in front of the telly, the Christmas tree lights just flickering on and off. I got in a bit of a fight with the missus the other day. Not a fight, we don't really fight, me and my wife. We have like gold lights on the Christmas tree, you know, just come in and out.
I feel like I know what you're going to say.
I want the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, the red, blue, green.
100%.
I want the colours.
So do I.
And she keeps going, "Nah, that's tacky." And I go, but it reminds me of being a kid. I want me colours back.
We have the exact same discussion.
Yeah. Discussion's a better word.
Yeah. Aoife won't let me get the coloured lights.
Nah, like,
I've said the same thing. It's a bit of nostalgia. I want to look at the coloured lights.
That's true.
And she said, no.
What have you got your Christmas tree up?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What lights have you got?
Well, it's a night. It's a nightmare, right? Because baby's like obsessed with it and putting stuff down. Your missus now would like our lights, right? Because they're, is it off white or a little bit yellow?
Yeah.
You know those ones, right?
Yeah.
But you know what? The big debate we're having in the house, you can put them on different settings.
Yeah.
And I only realised this, right? So I got real excited. So you can have static, you can have flashy, you can have calm differences, then you can go fade in and out.
Yeah, that's
and
me.
It's a huge source
people
of debate.
People who do that, their one are
that's
just
the 90s. That's the 90s disco element of it, you know what I mean? Yeah, but I can see the fights, and all escalates. It's like, you're like, it reminds me of being a kid, and then she's like, it's like living with a kid every day, and then you're like, what do you mean? And then you walk away, and it's all because of a Christmas tree.
Yeah.
Tinsel. I want to get a bit of tinsel on it.
I can't find it. I've
been vetoed against tinsel as well. I don't think we have any.
I can't find it. I need a bit of tinsel as well. It's just not quite decorated as footy as it should be, because I'll tell you what, for the first time ever, I'm going to be waking up Christmas morning in Dublin.
Right.
Wow.
Ooh.
Never done it before. I hear Christmas Eve is very big in Dublin, in town.
Yeah, walk down Grafton.
Whereas Stephen's Day will be massive in Cork.
Mm.
And I don't know if Stephen's Day is a big thing here.
Big thing,
but
yeah.
But Christmas Eve in Dublin's meant to be class. I've never done it.
No.
Until this year.
Jeez, you're a proper Dub now.
No, but we're leaving Christmas Day to go south. But we'll wake up Christmas morning in Dublin.
Okay.
At the first...
So Santa's coming to Dublin.
Yeah, someone coming right. Dublin, yeah, to make it easier, do you know?
What about a candle arch in the window? You know,
Do you know what? That's a boomer thing, isn't it? Because across the road from us there, that couple, they have it out there. It's a kind of sign of this. You're telling, it's like an ID. It's like, this is what age I am, really.
Yeah.
There's loads of questions here coming in. Mm. Hold on there, though. Bear with me.
Do you watch the darts at Christmas? Sorry, just a final one.
Love the darts.
Yeah, I used to
live in Lytham, so very close to Blackpool and... The worst thing, I can't. It was pre-season. I don't know what's on in the Winter Gardens pre-season, but you used to have to slope off to watch the darts and, you know, sneak a few points as well in pre-season. But I loved it. I sort of lost interest when Phil Taylor stopped playing. He was my hero. The way his darts landed in the board and just he'd land them on top. I thought he was unbelievable. But I played in the North Inner City Darts League.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah. When I was really heavy on the drink, I drank in a pub called Mullet's. And I was the captain of the darts team.
Really?
For about 18 months, yeah. And I was playing for St. Pat's at the time, and Liam Buckley knew about it. And I used to play on Wednesday nights in the darts league, and I used to turn up for training on a Thursday, and Liam would just go, "Oh, Jesus, not again." But yeah, no, I actually not bad at darts.
Right.
A couple of 180s as well in match play. Yeah,
I like it.
And I was recording a thing a couple of weeks ago, like a promotional thing, and we were playing darts. I was playing against Roddy Collins. Hammered him.
Did you?
Hammered him, yeah.
Jesus. It kind of doesn't surprise me that you'd be good at darts for some reason. Like,
We play darts, though, a lot before training. Like, we have a dart board. When you get into the force team, rather than your technique work, you've got all sorts of time. So, quick massage, game of darts. It got to the point where me, Dean Marney, and Michael Duff, Ross Wallace, we all went and bought darts tops. And I had Keith to turn Tracy, and we had walk-in music as we came into the canteen.
What would your walk-on music be?
I can't remember. I can't remember what it was. I put so much effort and time into me nickname, Keith to turn Tracy, and it was to do do with my weight rather than my scoring ability on the dartboard. But you can imagine Eddie Howe walking in and seeing that canteen thinking, Jesus. But yeah, no, love darts, can't get enough of it.
Oh, very good.
We had a dartboard there once upon a time, behind the camera, to bring it back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was I going to say to you there? So your entrance music, you couldn't remember what that was. Oh, that's a shame. Did you have a goal celebration?
No. No. I started just calmly ran back. I remember I scored against Burnley for Preston, and that was a good goal, and I sort of hit it from the angle, and as I was wheeling off, I was in front of the Burnley fans, and I sort of gave a bit of a fist bump, and I seen a pound coin just flying past my head, and I think I calmed down in the celebration now. So I just, you know, I didn't really do too much, to be honest.
At the moment, football turned back in the day, if you watch a goal in the 60s and 70s, they would shake each other's hand.
Yeah.
Good goal, chap.
Yes.
And then he would all jog back to the halfway.
And give
together.
A little one.
But
little.
Someone changed it. Someone started celebrating goals. Was it Tardelli, 82?
Tardelli.
When he went mental with that goal. It must have been someone before that.
Mm.
Someone started celebrating goals. Roger Miller onwards.
Yeah, you know who sparked the goal celebration for me?
Yeah.
Probably a lot of kids in the 90s, Klinsmann.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. When he started doing his celebration.
Yeah, Sheffield Wednesday, wasn't it? Hillsborough. Mm. Carol Leary, Q for Keith Friday. I see most teams now training on the training pitch with music playing from speakers while they train. Is this a new thing? Not sure how I feel about it.
Yeah, it's a new thing and it's... mental, isn't it?
Did you see the Caoimhín Kelleher interview during the week?
That was excellent. Ben Foster was brilliant. You love it now.
I saw the clip where he talked about in training sometimes they throw the headphones on him, and sometimes, you know, when he's, you know, playing out from the back and training or practicing passing from the back, and sometimes they'll play crowd noise to kind of get him in the game frame of mind, and sometimes they'll just play random music so that he's able to do it under pressure when he's maybe distracted and thinking about something else that he's able to. I thought it was bizarre, but also interesting.
I think it's very strange. I remember, didn't Arteta do this when Arsenal were going to Liverpool?
He
starts,
something he
you
would
know,
do.
You never walk alone.
I remember that, the Amazon
got a
Prime.
Lot of criticism for it, and this just seems like a little extension onto that now. But I thought if I was Caoimhín Kelleher and I was putting headphones on and the goalkeeping coach is fizzing balls back into me and I hear that, I would be very aware that I'm listening to headphones in an empty training ground.
Mm.
I wouldn't be able to replicate that intensity of feeling under pressure. It's like taking penalties.
Yeah,
it's totally unique. I don't think you can replicate. You can try. I don't think you can.
You like the crowd, playing in front of a crowd?
Does
it ever bother you?
No,
that's different from people. I remember, this is random enough, but Paul Merson, when he managed Walsall, there was a fella called Mads Tim, right?
Mm.
Mads Tim used to be a Manchester United youth player, and in Championship Manager he was lethal. You could sign him, right? And Paul Merson said, if I can move games to 11 o'clock on a Tuesday morning, Mads Tim would be the best player in the country. Yeah. But when it comes to Saturday at 3 o'clock, he can't play.
Yeah.
And he said that down the phone to Fergie, and Fergie said, I know, that's the problem with him.
Yeah,
so there are differences there.
I think Allardyce had that impression of me. He used to call me a TGP player, training ground player.
He said
you're brilliant on a Friday, but Saturday comes and couldn't see it anywhere.
Do you disagree with that?
No, I think I used to be annoyed when I turn up on a Friday and he named a team and I'm not in it, I think, right now. But then obviously the starting 11 know they're starting, so their levels come down a little bit and I'm annoyed, so I'm up a little bit, and maybe it was, obviously I was going to shine that little bit more on a Friday because I was annoyed.
Mm.
Loads of comments here. Carlino, this is mental. Lads, our Christmas tree has been up since September.
Yes.
But different rules over here. He lives in the Philippines.
Still September.
Yes.
It's still December the 25th, isn't it?
Yeah.
Christmas.
Yeah, it's a fair point.
It doesn't matter where you are. It's the same day.
I think it differs. Sandy Ford Motors. Keith needs to go into management.
Oh, no.
This is a good shout here by Mike O'Reilly, who is a member. We need some Keith Friday merch.
Merch?
Great stocking filler.
Keith Friday merch.
Did I say that? Keith Friday?
I don't know.
Keith Friday. Yeah, we need Keith Friday merch. So really, the audience today are trying to commercialise this segment, which is great, really. We're trying to make a bit of money out of this.
I noticed the first thing somebody said was Head and Shoulders.
Yeah, we called that out. Would you like that, would you?
What
do you associate Head and Shoulders with?
Joe Hart.
Dandruff, no?
Dandruff, yeah.
Not dandruff removal.
Yeah, but
I think it's separating itself.
I didn't know you had dandruff.
Yeah.
I think it's separating itself. Yeah, I think it's the way Weight Watchers renamed, because it was a negative connotation.
Mm.
I don't know what they call it now, but it's positive, right? But they were like, we can't keep talking about dandruff. That's mental.
Yeah.
So now I think they're just like, what's their thing? No, they do, because that ad is like, I didn't know you had dandruff. I don't.
They're still doing it.
Lots of questions. Paul Moore wants to know the worst away dressing room you've ever been in.
Oh, there's a few. Crystal Palace. Now I'm talking in the Championship. 2010-2012 was awful. Like, the, you know, the big steel skips, you bring the kit in and all, and your boots could barely fit through the door. I think there was one toilet and one cubicle. Yeah, it was. I hated Crystal Palace to the point where you'd be getting changed in the hall rather than in the changing room. There was no window, so you'd be sitting there. The showers would come on, the steam would be everywhere, and you can't really see. Tiny little place, nowhere. Like, you're battling with people to get your boots on. It was horrible. Millwall was the same. I remember going to Sunderland, and this was before I became a professional footballer. I was on a trip with Belvedere, and they brought us on a trip around the stadium alight, and they showed us the away dressing room versus the home dressing room. The home dressing room had all the red tiles for Sunderland. It was really neat and tidy, cushioned seats. And we went into the away dressing room. It was like a wooden bench, and all the tiles were white. Some of them were cracked. There was only cold water. I think this is brilliant. I loved that little side of it. But yeah, some of the dressing room. Crystal Palace, surprisingly enough, was awful.
Right, okay.
But now, might have got better now in the last couple of years, but when they were in the Championship under, I think it was Ian Holloway and whoever else, they were really poor.
We'll save some of the rest of these questions for Keith Friday's next appearance.
I mean, I used to get changed in a party cabin with Belvedere. So, did you know what I mean? Yeah.
You're used to it?
Fairly used to it, yeah.
Yeah, see. Keith Friday, thank you very much for coming in.
Cheers, lads.
Much appreciated. Keith Tracy as well.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's Sports Breakfast Show.